This is Free Speech Radio News for Monday, the 1st of January, 2007. In 2006, some 24,000 undocumented African immigrants traveled on dugouts to reach Spain as a result of the Spanish enclaves of Melilla and Ceuta being closed. The European Union has already given more means to the EU border control agency Frontex to handle the flow of immigrants arriving in Spain. In conjunction with the Senegalese army, patrols are organized to turn back any boat carrying undocumented immigrants. But the effort isn't stopping tens of thousands of West Africans from risking their lives on the treacherous journey in exchange for a chance to work in Spain. Join us today for the new Middle Passage, Barcelona or Die. I'm Aura Bogado. Stay with us. The REVA is a plan being developed in Senegal to help would-be undocumented immigrants develop agricultural products. It's largely ignored by youth, mainly those who were born in the city and would never go back to the countryside that lacks infrastructure. But with no outlook for jobs at home and a global positioning system in hand, Senegalese youth are determined to make the long voyage to Spain. The journey is rough, with hundreds crammed onto tiny fishing boats. More than 3,000 people are said to have already died trying to cross. But the youth have a motto, Barça or Barsach, or reach Barcelona or die. FSRN's Ndiaga Sek is in Senegal with our exclusive documentary.
The town of Joal Fadjud is famed as the birthplace of Senegal's first president, Léopold Sédar Senghor. But it is also one of the most important fishing ports in the country. Every afternoon, the waterfront in Joal rumbles with noise when the dugouts come back from the sea with their catch. Babacar Niang, a 30-year-old Senegalese, was born and bred in Joal. He worked as an artisanal fisherman in his family's dugout for years before he started navigating on European boats, which took him very far out into international waters. But Carnio, as his friends affectionately call him, always wanted to go to Europe and work there. He tried to get a visa several times, but his applications were always rejected from French or Spanish embassies in Dakar. Last July, Carnio embarked on the perilous adventure called Mbekemi or the Header, sailing 1,500 kilometers across the Atlantic Ocean to reach the Spanish-owned Canary Islands. After 6 days at sea, the boat had engine problems and they returned to Senegal. Carnia took the journey because he can't continue as a fisherman in Joal.
EU boats have destroyed our fisheries. Because they catch 5 tons of fish, they keep only 250 kilograms. The rest is small dead fish that they throw back to sea. They break the grottos where the fish live. Their boats have no frontiers. Very often, they fish where they aren't allowed to.
Many other Senegalese youth from all walks of life have tried their luck on dugouts to reach the Canaries. They have a motto, Barça or Barsac, meaning to reach the Spanish town of Barcelona or die. The youth are determined to go. Sanor Diop is a young tailor with a shop in one of the biggest markets in Joal. In June 2006, Sanor paid more than $800 to a trafficker to illegally organize the voyage to Spain.
A friend of mine who's in Spain gave me a phone call to tell me about the deal, and 3 days later we departed.
Like many young Senegalese, Sanor works hard to sustain a family of about 10 people. So, he decided to move to Europe, where he'd surely make more money.
If you see so many people ready to lose their lives just like that, it's because you can't stand working alongside some friends and relatives. Then one fine day, they go to Europe and come back home to build a big house while you are still hustling here. You can't even make ends meet. It's hard in Senegal. Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. That's why we all want to go. I traveled with a great number of youths. We were about 100, and I paid $810. We gave to the trafficker $800, and later he asked us $10 each to buy a tarpaulin to cover the boat. Just to say that we live rough down here, that's why young people want to leave.
Mais Awad has what one would call a good job in Senegal. He works in a bakery and his salary is about $150. He says if you have $1,000, you start looking for $1,000,000. So when his cousin offered to pay the travel fees on a dugout to Spain, Wad also accepted the adventure.
When I heard that people were going to Spain in dugouts, I told a cousin of mine who came from Italy. He was very skeptical about my traveling on so fragile a boat, but I assured him that I had many friends who arrived there, and we even spoke to them on the phone. He knows that life in Europe and life here are different. He has experienced both lives, so he won't ask anyone to stay here, and I was determined to leave.
Gathering the sum of money traffickers demand is never easy, but youth like Wad will always find it.
The trafficker asked for $1,000. My cousin gave me $600, and my elder brother gave me another $100, and I negotiated with the trafficker, who eventually accepted the money.
Going to Spain on dugouts is illegal, and the police are always on the lookout. They patrol the beach at night, and traffickers constantly change the place and time of departure. They can give you a phone call at any time.
The trafficker took my cell phone and landline numbers. 2 days later, he called me and said we would depart that night from Dakar, but he didn't know the precise time. When I arrived in Dakar, I and a group of other young people waited until 1 a.m., and the trafficker put us in a little boat and took us near Gorée Island, where we found a bigger dugout boat. It was full of people. We were 117 on board.
In the course of 2006, some 24,000 immigrants reached the Canary Islands, though more than 3,000 are reported to have died on sea. But young people are determined to go because of an acute economic crisis that has stricken almost all sectors. In Jawal, fishing, which is the main source of income, has been stifled by competition from EU fishing boats. Kuta Indong is an old fisherman who saw the fishing sector decline. That's why he found the means to send his own son in Bakami to Spain.
I'm a navigator, and I know how the Europeans depleted our fisheries. We no longer have anything to do. I had four dugouts, but I was obliged to sell two of them because the job didn't work. I went to Spain, France, Canada, Norway, America, Latin America. I went to Falkland on the European fishing boats. I worked on those boats from 1974 to 1995. They have depleted our fisheries, and today there is nothing left.
Senegal has signed the fishing treaties with the EU, which affect thousands of families who depend on the sector to survive. In 2002, Senegal agreed on a fishing deal of about $16 million a year, $4 million more than the previous protocol. EU will also raise the number of Senegalese employed in their fleets to 50% rather than the previous 33. But as a result, Senegalese fishermen travel further and further every day to find fish.
The government sold our seeds. The contracts are very bad and there is no control. European boats fish everywhere illegally. So if I find out that my son can go somewhere and get a job there to sustain me and sustain himself in the future, I let him go. I'm even very happy about it.
Yam Jai, Kutai's wife, wasn't happy about her son leaving. Instead, she was very worried about him facing the whims of nature and traveling on rough seas to Europe.
When my son told me that he wanted to travel to Spain on a dugout, I told him not to go. I don't prefer him going there by sea. I'd like him to take a plane, but it was his destiny to travel that way. So when he left, I was very frightened. I was so worried that I grew very thin. We waited 10 days with no news of him, and many people were reported dead. That's why I was so frightened. I couldn't know whether he arrived there or not. And people keep saying things they don't even know. But now he is there and he is in good condition. He calls very often and says everything is fine.
In the 1990s, things were worse. The economic crisis in Senegal and in other former French colonies in Africa was so acute that the CFA franc was devaluated. But at that time, the youth never thought of crossing the Atlantic Ocean in dugouts. But today, Senegalese youth like Carignan, Sanor and Wad dare to cross the Atlantic Ocean thanks to the new technical advantages.
All that we needed was the global positioning system, GPS, the food and the fuel. The GPS shows us the way and the distance we've covered, as well as the number of kilometers we've got left. Whoever tries to reach Spain dares go because of the GPS. It guides the boats on the sea. So only GPS takes people there. We also had 16 trash cans of 200 liters of fuel each. We were sure not to use all, but we had it just in case we got lost or met some other people who needed oil. If we got lost, we'd use much oil to find our way. That's why we took that precaution.
Until recently, fishermen would rely on the stars to travel from Jawal to the place where they got the catch the day before. Now, they use the global positioning system. According to Modum Boch and all the fishermen, young fishermen can go anywhere in the world if they have such a piece of technology.
Now young people go to Spain because they have the means. They have boats that can take them there. And they have the GPS that can show the road to Spain with no problem. The GPS is very important as it can tell you that there is this number of kilometers to travel to reach Morocco or Spain. We use the GPS here for fishing purposes, as it can show you the place you went to fish yesterday and at what time you got there.
But GPS is not enough. Immigrants put their lives at risk in the fragile dugouts. Often, once they hit rough seas, the boats begin to break. Saho, a Senegalese oceanographer, said one has to be a navigator to try the crossing of the Atlantic Ocean.
The GPS aids in navigation. Only those who know how to use it can navigate with it. You must be a professional navigator because knowing how to use a GPS doesn't mean being able to navigate. Some fishermen can use the GPS and they are very good at it, but how to navigate with it is still a problem for them. You can take a route, but you must know what is a drift. You must know what is a wind drift. You must learn it. There are currents and ocean tides, and you must know all of that. You can't just take your GPS, put it on a dugout or a boat, and go out to sea. You need a little bit of training.
In March 2006, Mbekimi was a juicy business for Jawalian traffickers. They are the only boats that risk the harsh conditions, and many would ask a whopping $800 per client to the Canaries. They all knew that transporting people to Europe in fishing boats was illegal, and police will regularly come around to check. So, the boats are made with minimum guarantee. Some of them are very shaky when people get on board. But the activity generates a lot of money for the local mafia, while the number of youth dying increase. Lamine Kairé is a wholesale fish merchant. He built his own boat and employs fishermen to work for him. Lamine has told us how much money it takes to build the type of boat the youth use to travel, listing the material used.
The wood to make the skiff and the stem bows can cost about $900. The planks to make the dugout can cost $4,000 because you'll buy 30 planks at $120 each. You'll buy 40 kilos of nails, 40 meters of sellotape. You'll buy two 20-kilo boxes of gravers each, which is $80, and you'll pay the carpenters some $500. So with $7,000, you'll have your boat ready with the paint and all.
And it never takes long for artisanal carpenters to build the dugout, Lamine said.
If all the material and the carpenters are available, it takes a month to build the boat. It's 22 meters long, 3 meters wide, and 1.5 meters deep.
But according to Lamine, boats immigrants use are not fit for long journeys.
These boats are not meant to go far. They go off to Jawal, to Mabor, or to Banjul in the Gambia, not very far.
Selling anyone enough fuel for a 3,000-kilometer journey is forbidden by Senegalese law. But traffickers would cut deals with gas station managers for up to 3,000 liters of fuel for a voyage. Zoro is a gas station manager who says he refuses to deal with outlaw conveyors because he didn't want to have problems with the police.
Clandestine immigration, the name says it all. It's clandestine. It's illegal and we don't want to have problems with the police. If we had problems with the police, we would be guilty.
However, Many traffickers tried to get fuel at Zoro's gas station, Zoro said.
So, many people came here for fuel, but we told them we wouldn't get into that kind of thing. We have never agreed to sell fuel to illegal immigrants for ethical reasons. It isn't legal, and we want to be legal, so we wouldn't touch it.
Therefore, Zoro wouldn't agree to sell to people who never were his clients, he said.
And of course, you can recognize your clients, and the tanks they use aren't even the same. Tanks they use for 2 days, 3 days, or 15 days on the sea, and the ones they use to go to Spain aren't the same. A tank of 200 liters costs about $210, and they take 16 tanks, which is 4,800 liters, and that costs about $4,000.
Traffickers also need to buy engines. A second-hand one costs $2,000. All in all, they invest about $16,000. The dugout is roughly 20 meters long, but they usually manage to squeeze in some 120 people at $800 each. That yields some $96,000, which is a net profit of about $80,000. Last August, the Spanish Minister of Interior visited Senegal to discuss joint operations involving helicopters and boats to turn back small dugouts carrying migrants from Cape Verde, Mauritania, and Senegal. The EU has already promised to increase the amount of money available for border control in order to strengthen the capacity of the new EU border agency, Frontex. But before such an organized intervention started, local authorities in Joal, on a minimal budget, tried to tighten security. Pierre Ndong, the deputy mayor of Joal Fajut, says it isn't easy to identify traffickers from wholesale fish merchants themselves.
We gave more means to the police of Joal to assist them with fuel and material for them to arrest people before it's too late. And they arrested many people because there was a time when Joal seemed to be the turntable of illegal immigration. Last week, the police arrested two buses full of candidates for immigration.
Thousands of youth are reported to have died, and the situation has already inspired Senegalese artists like rap star DJ Awadi. In his song, Awadi exhorts the youth to stay in the country, but he also accuses the Senegalese government of not keeping promises it made in the 2000 elections campaign. The going is rough. Once they reach international waters, the migrants travel on very rough seas. The voyage often takes longer than expected, and many run out of food and water. Sanor Job said they barely had any food to eat.
The trafficker said he would buy rice and all the ingredients, but you know, you can't cook for 100 people on a dugout. So each immigrant had something. I had bananas and apples and a bag of biscuits. A bag full of biscuits, and when I came back, I gave many biscuits to all these guys working in the market. Yeah, I did. All my friend drivers would come and dine on the biscuits.
Of course, there were hygiene problems. According to Carignan, many adventurers get seasick and some are afraid of going to the end of the boat to use the toilet.
For restroom, immigrants would go to the bow and the captain and other fishermen to the poop. But not many people went to the restroom. I presume it is the biscuits they ate. We didn't take any food with us except biscuits. They may have been constipated.
The voyage recalls how black slaves were being shipped to the Americas in the 18th century, as with the slave boats, too many people were squeezed in, like little fishes. According to Wad, sleeping is a serious issue.
To sleep, we all hurry to find a place. At 4 p.m., if you don't have a place to lie down, you won't find one. But nobody lies down, actually. You sit and lean on the boat, and another man will put his legs between yours, and he leans on the man sitting behind him. And even with that arrangement, there are some people who stand and wait. And it's like a soccer match. They get up after the first half, and then another group gets on the soccer field.
Many adventurers came back because they faced the problems on sea. Carignan and his friends came back because their engine took in too much water.
We turned back at the frontier between Mauritania and Morocco. because there was a storm and the engine started taking water. The water was in the containers of oil. In our haste, we bought fuel in containers that had water. We should have poured it out and washed it well with fuel before putting our fuel in it. So we had problems and we didn't have the tools to repair the engine. So we decided to get back before things got worse. But we thank God we all came home safe.
Maisawada came back because the bow broke and their boat started taking in water.
We stopped our voyage at a place the fishermen call Crossing the Styx. That's where the boats tend to break, where the African Ocean meets the European Ocean. We got into a zone of turbulence and there was nothing to do. The waves went high in the sky and fell back. And if they fall on your boat, they will break it. So we spent the night there, and those who couldn't bear seeing those waves got under the tent and sat there. Suddenly, one of them called and said there was some water coming in. We realized that the bow had broken. So we tried to tie it up with a rope, and we took two nails to fix it, but the water kept coming. That's when we told ourselves that if we left the whole job to the fishermen, we wouldn't survive. So we formed groups of four people, took buckets, and got deep in the dugout to fetch the water and pour it out. When one group was tired, another group took over.
In October 2006, more than 4,000 youth who reached Spain were deported back to Senegal. To avoid protests and riots, the planes landed in Saint Louis, some 200 kilometers in the north of Senegal. Each deportee was given 10,000 CFA francs, about $20, and a ticket to travel home. Many Senegalese thought it wasn't fair they got so little money, since Spain gave the Senegalese government 13 billion CFA francs, about $26 million, for the application of Frontex. Speaking at a press conference, the chairman of the International Organization of Migration, IOM, Mr. Brunson McKinley, said it wasn't fair to call these people illegal immigrants.
We don't like to talk about illegal migrants at all. I mean, a good IOMer will always talk about irregular migrants. And I think that distinction is important because, okay, it's true. A lot of these people, they are illegal in the sense that they have broken some kind of a law. You know, if the law says you have to have a passport and a visa and they don't have a passport and a visa, then okay, they've broken a law. And so in a sense, they're illegal. We prefer to call them irregular because to call them illegal seems to make them some kind of criminal. And they aren't criminals. They're not criminals. I mean, they're not criminals at all. They're job seekers. They're people like you and me who are trying to improve themselves. Well, there are a few criminals, okay? There are some criminals too, but not very many. Very few. Very few. 98% of these people are ordinary, decent people who have taken a big risk and are looking for a job. So they're not really criminals. We call them irregular.
In Europe, some countries agreed to regularize the immigrants, while other countries like France think amnesty policy will encourage other youth to try to enter Europe illegally, McKinley said.
Now, what to do with these people? Well, there's a range of choices. Some governments actually have an amnesty policy. They take large numbers and they allow them to stay. Italy has done this. Spain has done this. Italy and Spain have been criticized for this, for being too generous. The argument from France countries is that, you know, it's too generous. It attracts people. It encourages people to come. Who might not. But amnesty is not necessarily such a bad policy, particularly if the condition of an amnesty is that the person holds a job. Well, I think that is an indication that they are playing a useful role in the economy and the society in which they find themselves.
Last June, Senegalese authorities presented a plan called REVA, which would train youngsters in agriculture. But many Senegalese youth don't like the plan. City dwellers like Sanor Diop are not ready to go to rural areas to till the ground.
That's right that the REVA is a good plan, but people my condition aren't ready to become farmers. Some people are ready to farm, but me, I don't like farming because it is hard. If they can open factories where the youths can work, that's okay, but I'm not ready to become a farmer. Some people are ready to do it, but as for me, I prefer to sit at my sewing machine rather than farming.
Some Senegalese researchers think that the river plan could be beneficial provided they choose the right agricultural projects. Amadou Hadj is the head of an agricultural institute in Senegal's capital, Dakar. Amadou Hadj suggests the river plan develop rice agriculture.
We can develop rice because every year we import more than $280 million in rice. That money could stay here to generate other activities. We can also grow products to export, products that grow well here. I think of vegetables and fruit like mangoes.
The Mamadane Sound is a band composed of three youth who play African drums. They live in Fadjout, an island separated from Joal by a small river. The Mamadane Sound members face many social problems, but they aren't ready to travel to Europe in dugouts. They believe the river plan is a good idea and can add to self-sufficiency. Gregoire Dioch, a member of the band, thinks the youth should never get on dugouts to go to Europe.
Je connais la mer, je peux le dire. Je suis insulaire, je suis né dans une île. Donc je pense que
I know the sea very well. I'm an islander. I was born on an island. To venture all the way to Spain on a dugout is to risk your life. It also means that you don't believe in God. As a Catholic believer, I can't risk my life only to get to Spain. I'll never do that. If I must go, it'll be legally, with papers that will allow me to move there so that nobody disturbs me about my papers. I'll live there as a human being, a world citizen. When the tourists come here, nobody checks them. When we go there, they check. I don't want to live in such conditions. I wouldn't like to become homeless there. I'll go to Europe only if I have an employment contract with legal papers that will allow me to move around.
Gregoire gives a message to all Senegalese youth.
I launch an appeal to all Senegalese youths. I tell them that if they want to go, they must go by plane, legally. It's going to be hard, but you mustn't kill yourself for free. For you can arrive there and suffer and gain nothing from it. To stay 10 years, 15 years of your life there, after all those years of frustration with no money, you don't even think of coming back home. You die there. That's not the ideal.
In early December, José Luis Zapatero, the Spanish Prime Minister, visited Senegal to provide assistance to the border control agency Frontex that is expected to be fully operational for another 6 months. In the meantime, 4,000 visas were said to be given to the Senegalese youth over the two coming years. In December, the seas are cold, and with Frontex in operation, the migration flow has subsided. But for how long? As youth like Sanor are still ready to give Mbakami another try, unless their situation gets a lot better.
If I have another opportunity, I'll go, because I have many problems to solve. I can see my mother and my father getting in certain trouble. I must help them, and I have my sisters and my brothers to help. So the government must solve young people's problems. President Wade should solve our problems.
For FSIN in Senegal, I'm Jagasek.
You've been listening to a Free Speech Radio News documentary, The New Middle Passage, Barcelona or Die. You can find a copy of this documentary online at www.fsrn.org. I'm Aura Bocado.